Are you looking to reach new potential customers? SRD can help. We work with any size business and budget, plus our amazing listener base grows every day. For more information on how your business can advertise with SRD, please feel free to send us an email at sportsradiodet@gmail.com. SRD, Detroit's podcasting home.
They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Our best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Zerline will come out for about a 48-yard field goal. I mean, if you pull this off in terms of kick the field goal, then you do recover the onside kick, which seldom happens these days with the new rules, you still are going to be right at maybe, if you're fortunate, 1 second. If you were to get everything to go your way. So here's Zerline, part one, 48 yards. The rain continues.
Yes, it does. They've got to snap it one more time. The ball will end up in the hands of Tom Brady on the kneel down. And what did he say to us the other day? He says, I pray to win another Super Bowl. So help me. I'll never ask again. Can I just get this one, he said. Belichick's going to become the oldest coach supplanting Tom Coughlin, who was 65 when he beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 46. And there it is. The dynasty continues.
All right, welcome into Armchair Sports Talk. I'm going to be straightforward. I got that cut for one reason and one reason alone, because Justin hates hearing the Patriots are a dynasty. And I love hearing it. So Patriots win their sixth Super Bowl in the last 18 years. Boston is appearing to be title town right now. They are just winning titles left and right. Bring in Russ Ivanek and Justin Marcus. Guys, this was pretty much a snore fest, wouldn't you say, Russ?
I'm sorry, what? I've been zoned out for the last couple of days, because that was without a doubt the most boring Super Bowl I've ever watched.
It was bad. It was bad. Justin Marcus, I know you were glued to the TV. Loved every minute of that 16 points combined.
I'm just happy I got this man cold going on right now, because I could not hear any of the intro. So just like I was barely watching the game, I watched it. God damn it, Tom Brady.
Oh, wait, you said you didn't hear any of the intro?
Didn't take long.
You didn't hear any of the intro? Give me one. I'll play it for you one more time.
Oh, no, don't you dare.
Even in my recap video, I said there was no offense in this game. Was very, very boring. I mean, I'm pretty sure all of us had them getting to the over I think the over was like 52 points, and it was just terrible. No offense from two teams that actually have very high caliber offenses. If it wasn't for Julian Edelman going off for 141 receiving yards, this one could have been almost unbearable to watch. Patriots win it 13-3. Tom Brady, 262 and an interception. No passing touchdowns in this game. If you had told me that neither of these guys were going to get a throw for a touchdown, before the game started, I would have called you crazy. I would have thought you were absolutely out of your mind. These are two of the best quarterbacks in the league. They've got weapons galore. One of them will put it in the end zone. And never happened. Russ, obviously, we've said it's pretty boring, but like I just said, shocked that there were no passing touchdowns. How surprised were you that with how high caliber of offenses we had here, neither team could find that end zone through the air?
It was staggering. I kept waiting for something to happen. Brandon Cooks had a first down, I believe it was early in the fourth quarter. It was only like 15 yards, and it was the longest play the Rams had had to that point in the game. So looking it up, it was 24 yards. So it was a little more than I thought. But that's it. For a team that likes to go down the field a lot, how does this happen? It was very painful to watch. It was very shocking to watch. But I guess if the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady era has taught us anything, it's that it won't go how you want it, but they're going to win.
Oh, I mean, that's pretty evident. When you win one third of the titles since 2000, it means you've somehow figured out a somewhat winning formula. The stat that actually shocked me, and I don't know if you guys know this, they went 10 years without a title. From 05 to 15, they won no titles. I mean, obviously they lost the two to the Giants, but a 10-year drought there, that makes it even more impressive when you think it's really six titles in eight contending years. It's pretty crazy.
10-year drought. That's like me saying I haven't had a drink in 30 minutes, so I'm thirsty. Jesus. As a Lions fan, can we get a playoff win? Talk about a 10-year drought. Get out of here.
Well,
that's how you know when you're spoiled.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's been 10 years. Like, yeah. Okay.
Kind of like us talking about the Red Wings and a 10-year drought.
Yeah, and I've maintained that we were spoiled by the success there, but it still didn't reach to the level that this Patriots team has won.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Now, as I'm looking, I have the box score in front of me here, just kind of glancing through it. There's one stat, one number that really sticks out to me more than any other one, and that's the fact that on 10 carries, Todd Gurley rushed for 35 yards. Jay, a two-parter here. One, what the hell are you doing only giving the ball to Todd Gurley 10 times? And two, explain to me why the hell Todd Gurley spent a good portion of that game on the sideline. Even if you're injured, you are still like someone that draws attention. You go out there, even if you stand in place on every play, the defense has to commit the chance you might get the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they could have used him as a decoy, but clearly something was happening that carried over from the game prior to this game. That's not what I thought. I thought Gurley was going to have some kind of, you know, postseason breakout game where he's actually effective. I was shocked. Honestly, it felt like I was watching, the Broncos when they won last with Manning, and cause it just the quarterback play wasn't there. It was weird not seeing Gurley doing anything too effective because like those are the big names, and it was just a defensively low scoring, boring game. And if I had to bet Gurley being effective and actually getting a touchdown and getting mad yards and doing what he's done all year, I would have bet it in a heartbeat. Just because of one game, I wouldn't have steered away from it. But something, I mean, maybe there's something that's not being said, but you need to have a balanced running game. We know that here to be true. We know that to be true here. And I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I absolutely was as well. I said it in a video, and I think we can all be in agreement. When you're the best player on the planet at your position, or at least arguably, you can make a case for a few other guys, but when you're the best player on the planet at your position and you're in the biggest game, a game you're never guaranteed to ever get back to again, I feel like it would take literally the inability to walk to get me off the field. Yet this guy seemed more than content to just stand there and watch C.J. Anderson give it his best chance, watch the offense clearly struggle, clearly have something missing, and saying, nah, I'm good. I'm just going to stand here. Because you ran the ball 10 times. It means you clearly were capable of playing the game of football that day. There's just something that you didn't want to. And, I mean, injuries are injuries. But, Ross, how do you not say, no, I'm going to leave it all on the field. I've got 6 months to recover from whatever happens. Whether it's a nagging little injury or, you know, a major injury.
I mean, judging by his past interviews on this, I don't think it was a want thing. Like I am fully sure that he was committed to giving everything he's got. I just think there is something wrong with Todd Gurley right now. If it's an injury or what, I don't know what's going on with the guy, because we're not hearing anything out of LA, but something is wrong with this guy. And the Patriots keyed on it, and they made Jared Goff beat them, right? They said, all right, we're going to take away the run. We're going to focus on that, and we're going to play deep. We're going to take away over top, and we're going to make Jared Goff make throws to beat us regularly. So when they're focusing on Gurley and Gurley's not effective, he had to get pulled out because the running game was struggling, and I just don't get what was wrong with them. There has to be something fundamentally wrong, because we are talking about this guy as one of the best running backs in the league, and he is.
Yeah, part of me wonders if there's going to be a reveal.
South. There has to be. I'm expecting maybe 2 months from now or something. We'll find out, oh, he went in for an orthoscopic procedure or something. Like, maybe there's something in his foot that there's a broken bone, it's a smaller bone.
Yeah.
I'm completely speculating, but that would follow the logic that he's not 100%, but just in watching him, you might not tell right away.
I mean, he has to still be able to play because obviously they put him out there. But
yeah, oh, right.
I fully expect we're going to get a tweet from Schefter saying, you know, breaking news: Rams running back Todd Gurley undergoes surgery for insert what it may be. You never know.
Oh, right.
It really is. My last question: we want to touch on a Rams player decided to make a little bit of a statement about a player, the Super Bowl MVP Julian Edelman. I want to talk about that, but before we do, we have to bring up Edelman's performance. 10 catches, 141 yards. I mean, it almost seemed like Brady just kind of didn't have to, like, really read much. He just had to go, oh, there's Julian, give him the ball. I mean, the guy was targeted 12 times, caught at 10. After the game, I don't remember who said it, but I want to say it was Deion Sanders or LaDainian Tomlinson, someone doing the post game. Made the statement that Julian Edelman is slowly walking himself right into Canton. Obviously, I feel like it's a little harder for us to assess, you know, guys who could be going to the Super Bowl down the road, the Hall of Fame down the road, because we still remember the old school guys, Brady, Manning, Breeze. We look at them, not guys who came into the league just recently, but Justin, after everything he's done the last couple of years, can there really be a case made that Julian Edelman should be a future Hall of Fame wide receiver?
I mean, this year certainly helps that discussion, but I think once we get a little bit farther away from the Super Bowl and that performance, you know, it might help lend him to get in there, but I don't know that the longevity is there to make it. I think it's maybe just more of a knee-jerk reaction. He got the MVP of the game. I mean, people want to polarize it, so I think it's got to be more of just like it just happened, so we're going to talk about it in that sense, because I don't see that happening. Basically, let's put it bluntly, it's not going to happen.
Okay, Ross, same question. Julian Edelman, he's got a gold jacket waiting for him if he can continue on this trend.
No, the only way that he is slowly walking into Canton is if he's so slowly walking there that the door is shut long before he gets there. He has had 2 years where he's gotten to 1,000 yards receiving. That's it, right? He's had 1 year where he's had more than 6 receiving touchdowns. Is the guy good at what he does? Absolutely. He's an elite role player. We don't put role players in the Hall of Fame, though.
Okay, that's fair. Now, I have to ask, because I just looked it up, because I remember hearing it. Does the fact that Julian Edelman is second all-time in receiving yards in the postseason, that doesn't play anything? Because the only guy in front of him is this guy. Some of you guys may have heard of him. I don't think he was very good. His name's Jerry Rice. Played football for a couple years out west.
I heard he was okay.
Yeah. So the fact that he, I mean, and obviously part of this has to be, I mean, Jerry Rice did it for a whole different reason. And there's a reason mm-hmm. Jerry Rice is 1,000 yards ahead of everybody else in this record. But part of it has to just be the fact that Edelman's literally been in the playoffs every year he's been in New England. So just by, you know, collecting that much experience, you're going to get the yards. But second all-time in receiving yards in the playoffs, that's a stat that definitely has to help when it comes to making a case for Canton.
Oh, it might help, but I'd like to see those numbers on a per-game basis. I mean, this is something that the Patriots have played 21 extra games over the last 8 years than a normal team could be expected to. So, yeah, I expect if he gets more whacks at the pinata, he's got a better chance of cracking it open than anybody else. It doesn't mean he was the best.
It did give me a laugh.
He was there a lot.
It did give me a laugh. They showed Brady has as many touchdowns in the postseason as Goff has in his career. So it just shows you that, you know, by that much time, you're just going to collect those stats. Do I think Edelman's a Hall of Famer? I think you can make the argument either way, but I think he's one of those guys where he's not like, you know, Brady, and even the argument can be made for Gronk. He's not someone who, when his name's eligible, he's going to be a first guy. He's someone who you're going to see getting into the Hall of Fame when he's in his 50s, because enough time has passed and they're giving him his due. He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's someone that unless he does something miraculous over the next couple of years, he's probably going to have to wait a little bit to get into the Hall of Fame, if he gets into the Hall of Fame at all. So we'll see what happens there. But the reason we had to talk about his performance is because I don't know if you guys know this. Ndamukong Suh said, and Russ, you're going to have to say it because I'm pretty sure he said we shut down or we canceled out Julian Edelman.
In my opinion, we eliminated Julian Edelman.
What did you eliminate him from? Having zero catches in the stat category? What, like, yeah. Explain to me what you eliminated about the guy who torched you for 10 catches for 141 yards. Explain that to me, please.
Well, it's a lot like, to jump back to like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, yeah. Like the Black Knight gets all of his limbs hacked off and mm-hmm. he's still trying to bite at him. And he goes, fine, we'll call it a draw. Like, no, you got taken apart for 3 hours. You lost. So he's delusional. But I think there's a lot of Lions fans that aren't surprised to hear something like that from Sue.
I just have to say, are you surprised? Like, this dude, that fits his MO every day of the week. I think the only way that argument works is if, okay, Goff outgunned Brady and you win the game. And if you win the game, sure, you might be able to make that statement. But when I saw that that's what he said, it's like, you should take a page out of your coach's book, because all he basically said was, and what he literally said was, I got outcoached.
Absolutely.
And he was humble in the way of saying, yep, I messed up. I got outcoached. They did it. The Pats did it again. And Sue wants to try to bring props to himself. It's like, shut up. No. Like, that's what we dealt with while he was here. He's an idiot.
Yep. Oh, and get this. Edelman became only the second ever receiver to have 10 receptions and 140 or more receiving yards in a Super Bowl. Good job eliminating him. You put him in the record books.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, I don't really, to be honest, I have no idea what Ndamukong Suh was talking about when he said this. It's just stupid. You know what? If Edelman had gone out and had a mediocre game, or if Edelman had been the caliber of like an Antonio Brown and had that kind of day, or not that kind of day, had that, like, you know, middle of the road game, you can get away with saying it. The guy had 141 yards receiving. That means nobody was stopping him. Nobody. And you like to boast that you have such a great defense. That defense got torched by a guy who was a college quarterback who had no offers, was an undrafted rookie, and is now one of the more prolific receivers in playoff history. You didn't stop anything. So it's tough.
Have we considered the fact that maybe Sue meant Chris Hogan?
It's 11
versus wearing number 15. I mean, that's the only way I can really think.
He got his white receivers mixed up, is all.
Right. Like, that's, I can only assume that in the chaos of it all, that's what it was, because there's no way he actually met Julian Edelman and has a sane mind.
Yeah, but even so, like, that's so, like, ludicrous. It's like, oh, yeah, well, we shut down their special teams unit. It's like, but you still lost the Super Bowl. Like, yeah. Who gives a shit what you shut down? Like, you still lost. That's Sue. I'm so happy that he's not on this team anymore. Because, like, I know that we don't get a whole hell of a lot from Stafford and the people who are supposed to talk, but when you do talk, it better not be shit like that, because it's just outrageous.
All right, well, you just pretty much voided my next question, Jay, because my next question was going to be, you know, seeing the way he is, now that we get to see it from another perspective, he's not one of our guys, he's, you know, just a player. Seeing that now, Ndamukong Suh, I mean, Jay, you answered it, so Russ, I'll let you go. Ndamukong Suh, not a guy you'd ever want to see back in the Honolulu blue and silver?
No. I don't need him. Unless it's a guy like Aaron Donald, where he's far and away above his competition, it doesn't make any money in the cap sense. It doesn't make any sense in terms of cap to spend that much money on an interior lineman. It's just not where the game's going. You can make do. I mean, we have Snacks. We're not paying Snacks Aaron Donald money. Right, we're paying him a good amount, and that's probably about the most I'd want to pay, but Sue's demanding a lot more than that, and he's always going to. And then we get to all the attitude stuff. So, no, I'm good with him being as far west as we can get him.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And, Jay, you already answered, so we know you don't want Sue here, and that's totally fine. We'll accept you for that, Jay. All right, so as Russ's video said earlier, and if you haven't seen the videos, we post them. Try to get videos out every week, giving you a little preview of what we want to do, what we're going to talk about. That's at Sports Armchair on our Twitter. And Russ put out a video earlier today about, we've done plays of the week every week for the NFL. Now that the season's over, we want to do play of the year. The best plays from the year, our opinion. But before we get to that, because that's, you know, how we'll wrap up this episode, we have to, like, we have to discuss it, because even though there's no signs of it ending this anytime soon, the pinnacle's been reached. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are going to go down as the best duo in the NFL, best quarterback head coach duo. And the question I have, Russ, and this is a little kind of weird to me. What does it say that the greatest quarterback of all time is going to go down with a coach who's not even known remotely for his offense? The guy is considered one of the best defensive minds to ever do it.
Well, because I think Belichick really, is he a tremendous defensive mind? Maybe the best one in the league? Absolutely. Zero argument there.
Well, you look what he did with the Rams. I mean, like, that was an offense that a couple weeks prior put up 60-something points against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs aren't a great defense, but still, that was an offense that it, like, put up video game numbers and played out of their mind all season with a second-year head coach who appears to be an offensive guru. So, and Belichick made that offense look non-existent the entire game.
Absolutely. Well, and it's because it's an institutional thing with him. What did they do to neutralize Goff? A lot of what they did was they put in two play calls.
Yeah.
And with about 15 seconds left, when the mics cut off to the sideline, they changed the look of the defense 100% to make Goff have to make the calls to the line. Sean McVay, the offensive genius that he is, couldn't help him at this point. Who does this stuff? Who thinks of this stuff? Well, Bill Belichick does.
Bill Belichick
does. That's
why. Yeah.
Because the guy is constantly innovating. So is he an offensive guru in the way that he is a defensive guru? Maybe. Who knows? Probably not. But he is continuously innovating, and he's created this culture of, we don't do what the other people do. We try to figure out the little ways to beat them at it. So they're never chasing anyone, and they're always setting a precedent. And man, does it burn my ass as a Lions fan. But that's how he does it. That's how, even as a defensive specialist, he can change the game on offense as well, because they're going to do new stuff. They're going to find interesting ways, and he's going to bring in people with similar mindsets. So when you're always trying something new, people have to chase you, and that necessarily means they're behind.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I can see that. It's so perplexing, because whenever you mention these top quarterbacks of time, you know, Joe Montana, Bill Walsh built the offense for Montana. It was his mm-hmm. offense. You talk about John Elway. Well, he had Shanahan, who was very, very good offensively, and his backup quarterback was their head coach because he was such an offensive guy. He worked with John about it. You look at Brett Favre. Brett Favre had McCarthy. He had Holmgren early on. A lot of these guys, when you talk about how great of a quarter, I mean, Dungy and Caldwell. Dungy was more of a defensive mind, but Dungy did everything he could to have he really actually handed the offense to Peyton and said, you do what you need to do. And then Caldwell came along and was, you know, kind of helpful there. But when you mention these great quarterbacks, usually there's a head coach that was so offensive minded that that's where the success came from. It's kind of crazy to think you have this quarterback who's going to go down as one of the best, and his head coach really had no influence on the offense other than in team meetings saying, I don't like that play, please don't use it. He was more defensive minded. He worried about his thing. It's just kind of a strange pairing to say, this is a team that won 6 Super Bowls, and at no point did they ever have a superstar, you know, defense. They had a piece together, found the right guys that worked kind of defense. So I just think it really says a lot for their legacy that these two are different ends of the spectrum, because Belichick was a defensive coordinator everywhere he went. He was on those Giants teams in the late 80s that won titles. He's just always been that defensive-minded kind of guy, and his biggest legacy is going to be having the best quarterback ever on his team. I just think it's crazy. Justin, we know how much you love talking about Tom Brady, so I'm going to make you do it a little bit more.
Nah.
No, it's fine. You've been quiet. Yeah. You've been quiet for a little bit, so we're going to let you talk about Tom Brady.
Hey, you were right, rising your stock in the Patriots right there. I won't stop you from doing that.
That's fine.
No, everything that you guys are saying is true. I mean, as much as I don't want to talk about it, it's undeniable. What they do is the highest example of a dynasty. And to me, what I rate a team's dynasty is not winning, it's sustaining. And you look like, if you relate it to the NHL, look at the Kings. The Kings made it, and they won two cups, and now they're the lowest scoring team in the NHL right now. Like, yeah. You can go to the mountaintop, but when Russ is talking about innovating and staying up there, that's how you determine what is a dynasty. And as much as I hate it, like, trust me, I do. Like, it's not a bit. I absolutely hate it. How can you not hate someone who looks like, you know, he's 12 when he's probably 80? Like, all the people that they've lost, all the pieces that have come and gone, I'm pretty sure their first overall draft pick in this year is hurt. He's been hurt all year. They're still winning. It doesn't matter. They have half of a robot in Gronk. They've found ways, like Russ pointed out, to be innovative and stay on top of the mountaintop. And when you can do that, that's the highest form of a dynasty. You get people like LeBron and all the antics he's pulling this week. And like that's what shadows over a dynasty tag. So I literally can't deny it. As much as I tried to find something like last week talking about Deflategate and Spygate and all that, like, yeah, that stuff happened. But yeah, I mean, as long as we've been sports fans and watching our TVs, you can't deny what they're doing, and I won't. So I will step aside and gladly give, you know, glory to the Belichick and Brady era, because it is very much deserved.
I'm so happy for you, Jay.
You've finally accepted that hurt.
You're sick to boot, so that's really just adding insult to injury. But now that Jay's gone on his monologue, I'll actually ask my question that was not going to have him have to talk about Brady at all that much.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. You're justifiable. My question, though, is because it's a weird connection to make, but it's still a tiny connection. Our current head coach, Matt Patricia, a defensive-minded kind of guy, was a defensive coordinator for the Patriots. That's his thing, his defense. He's got this guy who, for all intents and purposes, should be a franchise quarterback, but has never really shown the ability to be that. We're getting a new offensive coordinator. We're getting all this. But if you're Patricia, do you, and this is for you, Jay, do you maybe have to kind of take a look and go, I'm a defensive-minded guy. That's what Bill is. Bill is very hands-off when it comes to Tom. Maybe I should be the same way and just say, you know what, Matt? You do you. Here's the offense. Let's see what you can do with it. Because no one's ever given Stafford that ability. Stafford's always have been under a regimented offense where he has to, you know, the play comes in, he's got to check with me kind of offense. For, you know, for those of you who don't know, when they all stand up at the same time and look at the sideline, that's a check with me. They're seeing if they have to change the play or not. So if you're Patricia, do you kind of go, you know, I know this side of the game. Let's let the guys who actually have something or some knowledge of that side of the game do what they need to do, especially Stafford, to make him successful.
I fully believe in delegating work, and even in your own workplace, or, you know, we're lucky enough to watch sports and, you know, how it's mirrored as, you know, careers as well. But you have to delegate. And I'm the whole narrative of, like, well, this is how Bill did it, this is how the Pats are doing it, I don't know if that plays anywhere else, because I think they have some crazy system that's how it works there. But for Patricia in particular, I hope he's delegating. I hope that if he wants to focus on defense, good. I told you in that draft, I expected him to fix the defense on his own with his own specialties and his experience. So if he needs to delegate and he needs to focus on that, maybe that is an adjustment that can become a reality. Does it work like it does for the Pats? Who knows? But all I know is I remember when I was watching the game, I saw a tweet that the defense compared to when Patricia was running it versus the defense that just ran it this past weekend. You know, Patricia allowed more points when he was on the defensive side of the ball for the Pats, and this year he's not there, and they allow a fewer amount of points scored. So I think it is very much a trial year for Patricia, and if they didn't delegate last year, they sure as hell better do it this year.
Yeah, that's fair. It's one of those situations where we have to try to find a winning combination somewhere, and you know, there's definitely worse things you can do than try to model your program after, you know, the New England Patriots. Even if it's just a copycat of it, you know, there's got to be some form of success rubbing off somewhere with that. So, all right, so this is it. We're going to say bye to the NFL. We're done with the NFL for a little while. So before we do, we've got to do our plays of the year. These are what we consider, of everything that happened over this NFL season, these are the best plays of the year. I will go first. Mine was pretty simple. When I was going to find these, this is weird. I'm a quarterback. You would think it would have been a throw or a real cool offensive play in that way. The first two plays I grabbed when I was thinking of my plays were runs. They were both running plays because, to me, there was nothing better. I'm not going to play it. I have it up here, but the one I would like to put out for honorable mention, and see if you guys are with me on this, honorable mention, Nick Chubb's 92-yard touchdown run for the Cleveland Browns. Longest in Cleveland history. Fair for honorable mention?
Yeah, sure. Just for what happened with Cleveland.
Exactly.
And finally getting out of the pit of misery there. As a Lions fan, yeah, I can get behind celebrating that bit of joy they had.
Yeah. Well, and still, it's the longest run in Cleveland history, and it's a rookie.
Exactly.
This team was, if you look at it, this team was propelled by two rookies this year. Baker and Chubb became very good pieces for this team. Now, obviously, Jarvis Landry being there and, you know, that defense trying to assemble. Two rookies, two of their, you know, first picks were off on the offensive side of the ball, and they both were very successful for the team. It was a great run. The call was great, and it was one of those things where you saw that run and you saw, okay, they've got a couple pieces here that, you know, they're headed in the right direction. This isn't going to be one of those years where the quarterback comes out, has a good first three games, then you remember, oh, this is Cleveland, and he's dead by week 7. So it was nice for that. So honorable mention.
Yeah, no, I can't give them honorable mention. We have very strict rules. It's only 3 plays. There's only 3 of us. You don't get to break rules whenever you want, Eric. That's not how this works.
Why are you the way that you are?
I make the rules.
I still don't know.
All right, so because I didn't listen to a word he just said, Nick Chubb, honorable mention. All right, so I really wanted to pick it. I really did. But after going through it, I went, you know what? There was a better run. There was one better run than that this year, in my opinion. So mine is Derrick Henry's 99-yard touchdown run.
And there's already been one safety in this half. Drive starts at the 1 and looking for a little breathing room, and they get that and plenty more. Derrick Henry still going. Stays in bounds. He might go 99 yards for the touchdown. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that has to be the best play there. 99 yards, end zone to end zone, pinned right up against the goal line. And I heard it mentioned a couple times, and I even kind of thought it too. It to me, it's a run that rivals Marshawn Lynch's beast mode. All those years ago. I mean, he was just looking for guys to hit as he was running. So that's my play for play of the year. Best run I've seen since Marshawn Lynch's run. So Derrick Henry, 99-yard touchdown run for the Tennessee Titans, my play of the year. We'll move on now. Justin was a little fishy. He decided to go. I had to try. I had to. Yeah, very poor taste. Very poor taste. Justin, you went with the Miami Dolphins. They had this play this year that last second desperation, and you know what? It worked out.
10 seconds left. Tannehill will throw it, and this will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Kenyon Drake! A miracle! Miraculous in Miami!
I just realized this after listening to this. I automatically have to disqualify this play because Drake scored against a guy who's got 97-year-old man knees and is a tight end. That doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
No,
it was in the back. The Dolphins
won that game.
Justin, I ask this question every week. I'm going to ask it for the final time for the NFL. Why is this the best play of the year for the 2018-2019 NFL season?
Now, when I tell you this, are you actually going to listen, or are you going to start working on something else?
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Go for it. I'm all ears.
I could listen to Gronkowski didn't have the angle all day long. Make it a ringtone on my phone.
Okay.
It is perfect. The reason why it's perfect is it's a shiny example that the Patriots are not perfect. I love that they are this dynasty, but they're still human. They are still susceptible to errors. And the fact that there were no errors on this play and that there's no flags called, and the fact that there was a walk-off touchdown at the end of the game and it happened to the Patriots who won the Super Bowl, there's only one other team that made the Patriots look like fools this year, and that was our Detroit Lions. So the fact that there are moments where the Patriots are idiots is my play of the year, because it was perfect in a play of itself, but it's more damning that the Pats couldn't stop that at the end of the game. So that's why it's the best of the year.
You know what, Jay? I'm not going to lie. I like that. I'll give that to you.
That was actually
a good one. It's a great play. It really was a great play. I remember sitting in the booth watching it as it was happening, you know. Same thing. I don't think it's pretty, you know, it's probably pretty obvious. I'm a Patriots fan. Lions come first, but I like
really?
The Patriots. So yeah, in case you didn't know, just being, you know, full transparency. But I even found myself going, go. Like, I wanted to see it. It's one of those things where I think we're all kind of a little too young to remember the Motor Bowl Miracle where Tennessee laddled it like six times to win the game.
Music City Miracle.
Thank you. I wanted to say the Motown Miracle. I'm like, that's not right.
That's right.
Music City Miracle. And like, while we were alive for that, and it's there, we don't really remember it. So this is what that is for us. It's that crazy trick play that shouldn't work, but somehow it ended up working. So it was a great play. Now, Russ, you chose a great play too, but you chose a play where, in our group text, you told us what it was, and 3 seconds later, Justin admitted defeat to all of us. Because you did something that not many people do. You gave love to the little guy. You gave love to the little guy, and here it is.
3 seconds to go.
There's Cohen.
Burton to Cohen, looking to throw it. Off of the handoff, the toss to Cohen. And look at that.
Toss to Cohen, and look at that. Russ, same question. Asked it to you 16 times. Why is this the play of the year?
Because first off, we saw something that we've never seen before. That was the shortest player to ever throw a touchdown pass in the NFL. The aforementioned reason why our shortened stature specialist, Justin, wanted that play instead. But it's also one that the clock's expiring, and they could have played it safe. They were on the goal line. They could have lined up with their fullback and tried to plow it in. But no, the future belongs to the bold. They went with a reverse toss to Cohen, who threw a touchdown pass. Like, this is what I watch the NFL for. Creative stuff. Fun stuff. Scoring. Looking at you, Super Bowl. And we got it all in this one. Do I hate that it was the Bears and it's another NFC North team? Yes, but the fact that I still love this play convinces me even more that it's the play of the year. They could have gone conservative. They could have been boring. They could have not had the play of the year. But they did.
And I got to vote for it, too.
Yeah, you know what? I was fully prepared to vote for mine. And then he comes and hits with that line. The future belongs to the bold. What is wrong with you, dude? You just like, we're going to have to start trademarking the things you say because they just work. They really
I've got a long drive to and from work. So it gives me too much time to think.
So what you're saying is you spent a lot of time talking to yourself. Okay. That's
a disturbing amount of time.
Now it makes sense. Okay. Yeah. I'm there with it. All right. Well, that's our Super Bowl edition of Armchair Sports Talk. I mean, if you listen to this show in any amount, you understand we all really love the game of football. We enjoy talking it. I mean, if you could see our text thread, it's football, football, football from the beginning of August till, you know, yesterday. It's nothing but football because it's a sport we all love. We enjoy watching, whether it's college, NFL. It's just a great time. And believe me, we're going to miss it. Guys, we got to somehow get through like another 5 months of no football. And
hockey.
So that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. As always, we always appreciate you guys listening. We have a great time doing this. I mean, we say it all the time. We literally get to do a sports show with our best friends and do nothing but talk Detroit sports. So it's a great time. Russ Ivanek, we really appreciate you taking the time today, buddy.
Yeah, I'm going to go talk to myself tomorrow.
I was going to say, you have Thanks a good time. Us. Yeah, absolutely. You have a good time with that. Justin Marcus, the little guy, is going to win this time. So, as a little guy, thank you for being here. We always appreciate it.
I'm very honored at all 5 feet, 4 inches to be here. And I'm just happy that we never had to talk about the Patriots again for a while. So good day.
That's fair. That's fair. And I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. As always, really appreciate it. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.